Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, Chris, we've been talking about road rage and what happened in Slidell yesterday. There were these shootings on the interstate yesterday morning, I think it was, early overnight. And, I don't know what's related here or not. Yeah, I think whenever something like that would happen before, you would presume it was either drug-related or a gang shootout or something. But then you got this guy in Metairie, right, the serial killer that I guess it'd be appropriate to call him that, was just shooting people at random. And now I got this guy in Slidell yesterday arrested for road rage. So when it comes to shooting on the interstates, is it all up for debate? Who knows what it's about? And we're asking you, the audience, are you worried about getting hit by any kind of crossfire? Peter Scharf is going to kind of be a bridge between all of that. He's an adjunct professor of LSU at LSU Health New Orleans School of Public Health. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Tommy. Great to be with you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for coming on. So when it comes to road rage, and we started this morning at 6 o'clock talking about Santa Anita and Dominican Republic and what was the perception as opposed to what is the truth as it relates to stats year to year. But when it comes to this, there is no misconception or wrong perception as it relates to highway shootings or road rage, because those are definitely increasing, are they not?
Right. And there was a research study that, you know, I hope you got from the Trace that said from 2014 to 2017, it went from 247 to over 600 road rage incidents. And then this year, it seems to be up. Memphis has had 29. There was an incident in the East Bay of San Francisco. So we're part of a larger trend. In the article, there's a dynamic map. And it seems that the road rage incidents are at major congestion points. You know, 610 meets 10 in Texas. I-10 here converges as you get to the city. And that's where some of these are occurring. And Slidell, you have an intersection of three different roads. So people get frustrated, they're packing, they're irritated, they're walled off by their car, and this seems to be what's going on. So we seem to be following a national trend in a bunch of ways.
So at some point, I guess, Peter, or in most cases, this is a crime, is road rage, and you study crime for a living and have been for a long time. Has there ever been any kind of study done that it is that there are intersections that are worse, as you just said, or it's people going slow in a left lane or anything like that, or is it just whatever people happen to be in a mood of that day?
Well, you know, you have this the perfect storm of people packing, massive frustration, and this feeling you're invincible in a car. And my wife being an example, she, you know, we get to Magazine Street and the highway, and, you know, I'm glad she doesn't have a gun in her golf glove compartment. You know, and I think people just get very, you know, irritated. But again, there are these two other patterns that you mentioned. One is the rolling drive-by. So you have drug disputes that end up on the highway. And, you know, what we know is many of these killings in New Orleans, in this area, are calculated hits. And what you do is you try and find the guy when they're least aware. So finding him in a car is part of that pattern. And the problem is the art of a good drug hit is it doesn't look like a drug hit. So when the police investigate it, it's easy to lump some of these rolling drive-bys into the road rage category. The third is this horrific incident in Jefferson Parish, and I'm glad my friends at JP solved that as quickly as they did. I was a consultant during the sniper case in D.C. in 2002, Muhammad and Malvo. And that case was a nightmare. that they were tracking cars from York, Pennsylvania to the North Carolina border in Virginia, south of Virginia. So that's 180 miles. So that, you know, those cases, you know, and they had a red Caprice and they'd shoot out of the trunk and Mulva would lay down and shoot people while they were rolling. So those cases are inordinately difficult to solve. And given ballistic technology, they call it NIBIN, which is casings matching. They were skilled and lucky that this guy was caught before any more damage could be done.
Let me ask you this, Peter, as it relates to staying safe on a highway and getting caught in a crossfire, being an accidental or incidental target. Is there anything we can do, or is it just the luck of the draw and hope that you don't get stuck in between one of these things?
Well, I think it's the hyper-vigilant in this environment. You know, and again, you know, the serial killer assault is like getting hit by lightning, you know, it's, or a meteor. You know, it's just unlikely. But, you know, when you see two cars edging towards each other, or a lot of honking, right? You know, that honking, if they're both packing, can result in something very ugly. So to be, you know, just back off, stay away. You think of the complexity of this. One of the issues is stand your ground, right? So in many states,
tell you what,
now,
Peter, let's pick it up there if we can when we come back. Because we got to take a
sure.
break, and I think that'd be a good time to stop, let everybody absorb what you've said already, and then we'll pick it up at Stand Your Ground, laws, empowerment with guns in cars, et cetera. Peter Scharf is our guest, adjunct professor of LSU Health New Orleans School of Public Health. If you have any questions or comments about the shootings that occurred in the city on the interstate, about road rage shootings, et cetera, he would love to answer them for you. You can text the questions to me at 870-870 or call 260-1870-916. Minutes from now, we'll be back on WWL. It's 9:20. How'd you like to see the Rolling Stones in concert? I think we all know by now Stones are bringing their No Filter tour to New Orleans on July 14th at the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, and you gotta be there, and we have the tickets. Good seats in the lower bowl section, valued at over, you ready for this, $500 a pair. Just go to WWL.com/contest and register to win. By this Sunday, June 30th, one lucky person is going to win to see the Stones in concert. That's one of those once-in-a-lifetime bucket list experiences from WWL. And I saw the other day where now it's almost like the president with Mick Jagger, where they make sure they have the doctors on standby, a hospital 30. Hey, really, Peter, I'm not kidding you, where to make sure that he's, in case anything happens, they can take care of it. Peter Scharf, our guest, adjunct professor of LSU Health, New Orleans School of Public Health. So when it comes to...
Tommy, I teach in medical school, so I'm all set for that doctor. I hope they have one at WWL. I'm the slave.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think we got some of them paddles, I think. I don't know if anybody knows how to use them. You know, this comes in about road rage, and maybe it goes to stand your ground, Peter, like you were mentioning before. This text comes in and says, when you endanger my life and my family's life because you're late for work or have a more important place to go than me, riding my bumper or trying to pass on the shoulder, yes, I get enraged. You are in the wrong. And they're not talking to you, Peter. They mean, you know, the generic you. May I suggest you wake up earlier to be on time, you bunch of inconsiderate wing nuts. It seems to me this person should not have a gun in the car.
Oh, definitely not. You know, and one of the things is when can you use deadly force as a citizen, or as we talked about last week in that great interview, a police officer? It's when basically your life's in danger, not when you're inconvenienced. And, you know, because also most motorists don't know the law. They don't know when you can use deadly force. Now, the stand your ground law is a lawyer's dream, an appeals court lawyer's dream, because where I understand it, if two people are in a face-off, face-to-face on a street, What does that mean in a highway context? You know, what does it mean I can't back off? We're both rolling at 60 miles an hour. So this creates all kinds of legal complexity. But again, you know, if you don't know the law and you're irritated by traffic and you have a gun, that's the perfect storm. And I think that's what's going on.
You know, I saw you had some comments or some opinions on the shooting that happened, the shootout that happened at CVS, police officer wounded. I think the two suspects were shot as well, or one of them was shot. You saw the video. What was your take on that?
Well, you know, one, we have a great chief and a great police department in New Orleans, and the officers were incredibly heroic. We do not pay those folks enough, you know, to make that decision. Having said that, and this is, you know, that great show last week, you know, the issue of avertability rather than legal justification. What the independent police monitor looked at, was it legally justified? They shot first, no brainer.
Wait, say that again? The police monitor said what?
They looked at the question of, was it legally justified?
Yeah.
Right?
And they said it was.
Right.
Okay.
But there's another question, and that is, was it avertable and avoidable? The research I've done on deadly force incidents going back to 1979 suggests police shoot one out of 30 times in which they legally could use deadly force under Garner versus Tennessee. So the issue there, you know, there was a moment in the tape where the two perps are running away, and I have no sympathy for them. And you know, everybody blasts, but it's in the middle of a crowded street, you know, a residential area. So the question, you know, that's probably not something that, you know, anybody wanted to see happen. And it easily could have gone badly, as the chief said. So the question is how, through mobilization of resources, get the brain surgeons there, the tactical police, SWAT, et cetera. There's a nickname for SWAT, sit, wait, and talk. So get the sit, wait, and talk people there and cordon them off. Don't let them go mobile. You know, having a person with an automatic weapon running down Upper Line Street is not the outcome that anybody wanted. Luckily, as Superintendent Ferguson said, no one was killed. There's no grand jury. It was justified. But again, it's an opportunity to look at our tactics and, you know, figure out how we want to handle these incidents in the future.
So let me ask you, unless I saw the video wrong or missed something, police officers go in, they see he's got a gun, they retreat back outside, right? And then the perp has a gun and he starts shooting, right? So, I mean, at that point, right. What would you have the police do? What are they supposed to do?
No. At that point, at the police officer level, it's a no-brainer, and they followed their training. It's the issue of, you know, how do you respond with sufficient resources so you don't put these young police officers in that situation? One officer was shot. So, you know, the state of the art, what the evidence says is, can you mobilize resources in sufficient numbers and quality so that you don't get into that crossfire situation? 3 months before, we had the Elkin Canal Street shooting, which again goes mobile, and there are shots all over the place. So to revise our tactics, so we, to the best possible, and it's not a perfect science, obviously, you minimize the risk. You know, it's easy to get into the adrenaline rush in law enforcement or medicine. I had a surgeon friend who wrote me about the tape, my comment, and he said it's trauma drama. So the surgeons try to avoid trauma drama. I think the police need to avoid police drama as best as possible.
Wait, go back on that. Explain trauma, drama, and police drama. What exactly are we talking about here?
Well, the, you know, surgeons do everything possible so they don't get into an emergency, and they or engineer a surgery procedure so there's absolutely minimal risk. I think the state of the art of law enforcement is how do you engineer tactics? And not in all cases is that possible. Can you cordon it off, slow it up, so that you avoid any risk of an injury to a police officer or to citizens? And this is very scary, not at all criticizing the officers on the scene, but to really look at our tactics and how do we get better at risk management in those kind of situations.
So in an ideal world, and you're not criticizing the police.
Absolutely not.
How would you have had, or in an ideal world, what would have been the perfect response to what went down at the CVS?
Well, it goes to resources, too. You know, in the sense of as soon as something, get the 108. Officer needs assistance. You have sufficient specialized resources who can cordon off the place, seal it off, corner them, and it won't always work. But that's the state of the art drill.
But wait, I just want to get this in before we have to go.
No, sure.
If you got
somebody that's
an armed robbery, they got people tied up. Wire ties, whatever it was, electrical ties, zip ties in the store, mm-hmm. and you can find them to the store. At that point, you're creating a hostage situation, are you not?
Well, right, and that's another risk you want to avoid. But going with the perps going mobile with automatic weapons running up upper line, there's a risk there too. So there are it's a multi-tail risk situation. So use the situation, that's all I was saying in that interview, to learn, to model it. This is an unbelievable opportunity for learning. It's a case study. People will be studying it for years, hopefully. And what are the optimum tactics that you avoid the loss of life and danger to officers? And that was the point I was making. The officers, they fulfilled their duty. They acted within the law, but again, what tactics can we deploy going further that we get better?
Thank you, Pete. I appreciate your time as always. Peter Scharf, adjunct professor at the LSU Health New Orleans School of Public Health. We're going to talk about something else when we come back that's been getting a lot of headlines, and that is, you remember I think it was the Chicago Cubs playing at Houston, and a Cub batter hit this liner. Foul ball that hit a little girl in the head, and he wept about it.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.